Hey guys, Kirsten here with the Overmatch Podcast. Today I have a super special guest, Jess McLaughlin, and we are going to talk all things travel security, whether overseas or within the States. So thank you, Jess, for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's so good to see you again.
It's good seeing you. For those who don't know, Jess and I have known each other since second grade.
Yeah, we go
second
way
grade,
back.
Right? Yeah, that's a long time. And kind of split apart because both our families moved a lot, and then found each other because of the one good thing that social media has done for me, at least. Found
Same,
each other again. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on. I couldn't think of anyone better to give true advice for safety traveling, because you travel more than you're at home.
It's a lot of time traveling. I enjoy it. I'm in year, this is year 15, I guess, of being on the road for much of the year. So for better or worse, that's a lot of time.
Learned a
being
lot.
Away from, yeah,
exactly.
Found a lot.
So
in good places.
For people who don't know, give a little bit of your background, what you do, who you are, and all the amazing things. And when you don't say enough good things, I'm going to poke you, because what you've done is incredible and people need to know.
Well, thank you. I'm, like I said, 15 years now being a traveling photographer and writer. My business is split kind of half with the camera, half with the pen. And through that time, have worked mostly in the fly fishing industry, which is a very strange niche to be in. It's a very small industry, but it's been very good to me. I've also helped run lodges in Russia and Belize and in the US. So I've gotten to work and live in some countries that, you know, logistically and from a safety angle, present some challenges. And it's been very much a learning opportunity. I didn't go to school for this. I just started this career because I wanted to travel. So it's been learning on the go. And
so why fly fishing?
I fished as a kid. I'm a Montana kid. I grew up in Montana, and here it's usually for those of us who are from here, it's like horses or fishing. And as you know,
and you did both.
I did both. I was a horse kid way back, and then got out of that and kind of rounded back into fishing. And enjoy the people. It brings together, I think, you know, same things in like the firearm industry and in the outdoor industry, whatever small industry you choose, we're often drawn to that for the people. And fishing tends to draw people who like to be in beautiful places to catch weird fish. So it's been a pretty fun place to work.
Now, you didn't go to school for this, meaning college. Your story is way cooler. So I want you to tell that story about how you ended up in this career field and just dominating it, especially as a woman, because like policing, this is a very male dominated world, and you excel and are one of the best at it and are renowned for all that you do. So tell the audience about your awesome story of how you got there.
Well, thank you. My story is pretty non-traditional. I have people reach out often saying, hey, I want to fish and travel. It looks really fun. I'm always quick to remind them it's a lot of like sitting in airports in third world countries. And it's not the fun stuff you always see on social. But I, as you said, I didn't go to college. I turned down two full ride scholarship offers to go to college, which was a very fun conversation with my parents, as you can imagine. And actually left my school education in eighth grade. I was kind of asked to leave a private school here in Montana because I was arguing with the logic and rhetoric teacher. He didn't want to teach the curriculum, and I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn the like the mathematical reasons of why people think the way they do. So I would say, hey, you know, stop reading us fiction stories and wasting our time. I want to learn what you're supposed to be teaching us. Small town Montana, that didn't go over very well with the school board. So I was asked to move along, which was fine. And luckily I had parents who said, okay, let's think outside the box. You're bored in school. Let's homeschool and let you kind of accelerate through. I essentially got through, it would be like an associate's degree in high school while running a horse business, like a boarding and training business, training horses. So I was able to really get a lot done in high school and get a taste of running my own business, which I liked. I had an LLC at 13 that my mom, bless her heart, co-signed on. So it was a very quick introduction to like profit and loss. Here's how you run a business and the ups and downs that come with that.
Right. And real life experience at 13.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I look back now, I'm just like, I was that weird kid. Wholeheartedly. And I roll with that. I was that weird kid who's like, yeah, let's do a profit and loss statement on the business instead of going to like the movies and a date or something. But it served me well. After a while, I burned out in the horse industry. After 2008, the market to sell expensive horses wasn't there anymore. Big surprise. And so pivoted and started taking more photos. I'd always written and taken photos, but started looking at that as, okay, my former career life path, being a professional equestrian, is no longer of interest. What do I want to do with my life? And photography and writing was still there. So I started thinking, okay, how can I turn that into a business that lets me travel? Because no one in my family traveled at that point. None of us had passports. And it was something I always wanted to do, was just get out of the country and explore.
What was the appeal to travel? What because that wasn't something you did, how what was that? What was it about it? What drew you to it?
It's a really good question. I don't know. It's hard to put a finger on. I know now, I've learned over the years that I don't know what I like and what feels like home until I see a bunch of different places and different ways of living. And I don't know if that was the train of thought when I was young and I just didn't kind of recognize it for what it was. But just the urge to get out and see more beyond like small town Western USA living. I knew it was a big world out there. I was an avid reader, so I think books probably had a lot to do with it. I know you read a lot as well. We can always imagine these places in our minds and think, oh, what is it like to sit on that beach with that coffee or whatever, to be in that place. And I feel really lucky over the years. I mean, it's been six continents and 25 countries, I guess, that I've been able to work in. So I've gotten to see
Amazing.
a bunch of different ways of life. Some
What
good, some not as
what companies did do you, I don't know, I guess you work full time for Onyx, right?
I
Or
do.
like
So I work
your
full
W-2
time.
form. Okay.
Exactly. Work full time for Onyx. For those who don't know, it's like a hunting GPS app. So I work for them as a writer and write a lot of their hunting content, which is fun. The hunting industry is not my deep passion, but it's adjacent enough to fishing that I really enjoy it. There's again some good people there. And then on the freelance side, I mean, editorially, it's everyone from like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal to Men's Journal and Outside, and then a huge cadre of fishing magazines around the world, which again, small niche, but it's fun to be able. This morning
And
I've
even the
been
US
on,
Army, right?
and the US, exactly. So like on the commercial side, it's been the US Army, it's been Yeti, Patagonia, Starbucks way back when, Walmart. So a bunch of like, I think the fun thing about being freelance is you end up taking jobs with people that you would never really think about working with. You get a random, I had a phone call this week from someone who I never would have pitched, and they're like, hey, we want to do a project with you. And it's kind of like, sure, why not? I'll learn something and have fun with it. And we just kind of take it day by day. You know how small business ownership is. It's very much a day by day. You can't slow up or slow down because then things just kind of spiral.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's get into some of the safety aspect of all of your travel and experience, because
Definitely.
I'm sure you would agree that your greatest teacher is the experience. You know, you can only learn so much in a book or in a school, and you have some crazy stories, and feel free to push those in wherever you want.
Perfect.
But what would you consider your greatest travel fail?
I think greatest travel fail is over planning at times. I'm a very type A, you know me. I'm a very type A person,
You
and I
love
like to.
planning.
I love planning, which usually it's an asset, I think, in this work. But there are
Oh, for
times when I'm in
sure.
a country and have a down day or two, and I'm trying to be better now. I just turned 36, so I'm like mid-30s. I think hope I'm maturing a little bit. I'm trying to be better at just saying, okay, I have a day in this random city. I'm just gonna go explore and just walk. Whereas in my 20s, I think I was so in my head about. I pretty much always travel solo. It's very rare that I'm in a group. So solo female traveling by herself with a bunch of expensive camera gear, I would almost overplan and be like, okay, I can't go to this part of town. I can't do this. I need to be here at 10 o'clock, here at 11 o'clock. And I think I missed some cool small moments because of that. I probably avoided some things I'm glad I avoided, but it's learning to bridge that gap between being type A and embracing that and having the plans A, B, C, and D and onward, and just being able to adjust it. Like sometimes those plans all go out the window and we just have to roll with the punches.
So with that, with the planning, what are the the best things to do to prep for a travel both overseas as well as just within the states, because I do think that is a bit different.
Absolutely. I think regardless whether it's stateside or international planning, I mean the upside of the internet is you're able to get online and dig through forums and websites and see what parts of town you can go in. I'm getting ready to go down to Medellin in Colombia, and that's very much a city where like
Oh,
you
wow.
stay in the nice parts of town and you don't go beyond it. And same thing after that, I go into the Darien Gap, and that's very much a like I need to be aware of where I'm at all times and like where is it safe for me to fly my drone and where, you know, just checking all the boxes basically and going in educated instead of landing in Medellin at the airport and being like, okay, I'm here, this is fun, and having no idea where to go. So
So explain what going in educated looks like for the person who maybe isn't as travel experienced as you.
I spend a lot of time honestly combing the internet, spending time on travel forums. I know Expedia, I was on their forum the other day looking at info for Medellin. They're not typically an asset I go to. I know a lot of folks say look at the State Department warnings and the State Department website. Honestly, I pretty much avoid that. I check it for health warnings and health issues. If there's a, like Buenos Aires right now, I was there a few weeks ago, they had a big dengue outbreak. So I was a little bit more careful about mosquito bites than I would have been otherwise. So it's useful for that. Check newspapers. They still exist in some places. Get on their website and check, like, okay, what's happening in this? Either, you know, if I'm going to New York City tomorrow, I'm going to be checking the New York Post and the local New York papers to see, okay, what's new? Is there any kind of protest or something I should be aware of that might not be making national news, but might affect my time on the subway or something?
What else are you looking for? What about, locations? And you normally know what the plan is when you're going in. Like, you have a specific task or something, but what if someone's just, on vacation? What should they
Definitely.
pay attention to and look for?
I would really pay attention to where you're staying. Make sure you're trying to stay in a decent part of town in the hotel. If you are less concerned about that, then at least try and make sure the hotel, even if it's not in maybe the best part of town, check online reviews. Obviously, reviews you have to kind of take as an aggregate number. Someone's always going to be pissed off and leave a terrible review. But if I am looking at a hostel in Panama or, you know, some random place and I'm looking to stay in a low to medium expensive hotel, I'm still going to get on and look at not only the hotel's website, but a couple of other independent booking sites. And if 20 reviews are all one star saying people had issues, that's a trend, right? So that's probably worth paying attention to. And if there are 25 star reviews and it's still very basic accommodations, I probably feel okay about going there.
In my line of work, that's what we like to call a clue.
There you go. Exactly. We like those clues. They're helpful.
Yeah,
Although
clues are
people
good.
ignore them very much. I'm amazed by the number of people who are clueless.
I don't understand how so many people are alive that are so clueless, but here we are.
Agreed. I ran into a few on this past job in Argentina where it's just like people who I would stop and help in the airport because they hadn't pulled any pesos. They didn't have any local currency and they were trying to book a taxi that only accepts pesos. And so that's another thing for me going into another country. I always look and see like how widely accepted are credit cards? Some places, Argentina's in the midst of reasonably wild economic strife right now. And a lot of places are not accepting credit cards because they're extra fees. And so I was careful to make sure I had a wad of Argentine pesos going in. It's
Now, did you know that prior to?
I did. And that was part of the
And how?
research, web research. That's part of the thing. I
Exactly.
always researched the newspapers. That was a good clue. And then I was able to reach out. It's an upside of social media. I was able to reach out to friends in Argentina and say, like, okay, here's what I saw on your local newspaper. How much is this going to be an issue? And where can I find pesos at a reasonable exchange rate? Airports tend to be kind of the worst place to exchange money because the rate is so bad. So
It's high.
yeah, being aware of that, I think, helps. And it just takes stress away.
So let's talk about travel hacks, because one of your best travel hacks that you told me about is super important, and I don't think people think that way. So let's talk about your best travel hacks, including how you decipher your money and put it to different places and stuff.
Definitely. I always divide my money up. I always go in with a lot of not a lot, a couple thousand dollars of USD, US cash, because that's fairly widely accepted. If nothing else, you can trade it for local currency. And that US money, it needs to be crisp and like untorn and unfolded. So I typically will go to the bank and say, okay, give me your nice $100 bills, please, and thank you. Because often those the rumpled bills won't be taken in exchange. So making sure you have some crisp USD, and
Is
I
that because
secret
they
that.
think it's fake?
They think it's fake, or it's some places they just view it as like not having the value. So
Okay.
Argentina, I know I watched someone in an airport actually standing at the cambio at the change desk, and he had a it's either a $50 or $100. I couldn't see it well enough. A US bill that had like a dog-eared corner. You know, just a folded corner. Like I have one in my wallet now. I'm sure you probably do too. And they wouldn't take it because it had the fold in it. So for
Wow.
whatever reason, and I don't think every country is as strict, but I hedge my bets and go get nice, clean, unfolded cash.
That's great to
And
know. I didn't even know that.
it helps. And again, odds are low that it would be an issue, but when it is an issue, it's a problem, right? Because you're in a foreign
That's a
country.
big problem. Right.
Yeah, you need money. But I hide that money, however much I'm taking in between the US currency and the local currency, I divide it typically into three different piles and keep some in my wallet. I'll keep some in, typically I have like a waterproof backpack that I travel with and then a Pelican case that holds my cameras. And I'll hide money in each of those bags. So I've got the money in my wallet, the spare cash also in that backpack, which stays with me all the time, and then
Right.
money in the Pelican. So if one of those goes missing, I still have a backup. I've also started dividing my credit cards and will keep a credit card in each of those little packs. So again, if someone steals my
Smart.
wallet, I travel with a dummy wallet, which I would highly recommend for folks in pickpocket prone areas. I just have it's a small, simple wallet that I put like old library cards in and expired coffee cards and a couple like US dollar bills. So it looks, you know, if someone kind of grabs it and feels it and flicks through it, it looks like there's credit cards and cash in there. It looks legit. And that's often a good deterrent where if you're going to get pickpocketed, if they can take that instead of your actual wallet, it's a much better scenario. Obviously, try and avoid it regardless. I never stick a phone or a wallet or my passport in my back pocket, like the butt pocket of your pants traveling, or any exterior pockets on my bag. I always make sure it's a pain to access, but like keep that stuff in the big interior section of your backpack where it's harder for people to get them.
Have you ever been pickpocketed?
Never. Knock on wood. Have not had an issue. I've had the fake wallet attempted to be stolen once, as kind of a hold up. Hold up's too strong a word, but like give us your money type thing. But it was not a pickpocketing. Like they
Oh, so it's
addressed
just
me.
a robbery, no big deal.
It was just a robbery. Yeah, I guess that's, I mean, it was a robbery. It was just a robbery. But they took the fake wallet and then I was able to get away before they saw it was fake and get to an area with more people. So it did its job.
Wow.
And it's a very good thing to
There you go.
have. Yeah.
Your stories are just amazing. I swear, I've said this a million times. If you don't write a book, I'm going to hurt you.
I had another person this morning on Instagram message me that, not in those words, but they were like, when you write a book, I'll buy it. So I was like, okay, one of these days, I know I need to sit down and do it for
You
sure.
need to. You've got so many incredible stories, and that you've lived an incredible life that most people haven't, and it would absolutely be a bestseller. So I'm just
Well,
throwing that
thank
out
you.
there. So talk a little bit about, give the example. I won't say where you did have to actually kind of use some verbal judo and offer up a certain amount of money to get out of a certain location,
Yes.
and how important it was that you did divide up all of
Yeah.
your cash, because otherwise that would have blown that up real quick.
Yeah, exactly. And we can say it's more complicated now. It was in Russia years back. It was 2012. And my first
You were
job
still a
working in a
baby
fit.
traveler.
I was a baby child. I was a kid. I was, I guess, 20, 23, 24. And still pretty new to traveling overseas. It was one of my first like overseas jobs. I had to pull up a work visa, which is even back then was not easy to do in Russia. Loved the work. I was working above the Arctic Circle near Murmansk, about a 3-hour helicopter ride from Murmansk on the Kola Peninsula, a very like famous storied fishing camp, and ended up having my season cut short because I got an ultimatum from the camp manager, who ironically was the only other American in camp, that I either sleep with him or he was going to pull my work visa, and I would be left in the middle of the Russian tundra with no work visa, which is a problem, as you can imagine. And it's a longer story that turned into a physical assault from him and a bunch of different issues. Thankfully that I was able to manage and stop. I would definitely recommend, like, ladies out there traveling by yourself, at least, like, I had some Krav Maga background, at least know the basics of, like, how to deal with a drunk guy who's a problem. And Kirsten, you know so much more about that than I ever will. But it's, I feel like if we're smart, even though we're smaller and not as strong as the guys, there are things we can do to help deter that.
100%. 100%.
So being able to deal with him, and then I had my work visa pulled. So I had 3 days to find a way back to Murmansk, which again was a helicopter right away, and get a ticket, like get out of the country, basically. I managed to do so with a few hours left on the clock. But the gate agent in Murmansk, I guess, looked at like the issue date on the ticket or something. He knew that it was a short notice purchase ticket. I think probably physically a mess. He could tell, like, this girl is trying to get home and needs to get home.
Right.
And wanted a bribe. And so, you know, it was like, hey, how much cash do you have? What can you give me for me to let you on the plane? And luckily I had my tip money. I was very broke at this point in time, but I had my tip money from the lodge and had put some of that money in my wallet. The rest of it was hidden away in my bag. And I'm so glad it was, because this was a back and forth discussion with this guy that ended up being like, hey, this is what I have in my wallet. Take it and let me on the effing plane. And that was a lesson for me of, like, now I keep, I think he ended up with, I don't know, $300 or $400. Now I don't keep that much in my wallet. But he could have ended up with a couple thousand if I had it all with me. So that was an early lesson on dividing money and keeping it split up really helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great, like I said, life is a great teacher.
It is. And I always remember that now. I will never go on a trip with all my eggs in one basket, you know, as it were, because of that. So it was a good lesson to learn early on.
So let's talk about a little bit more of the safety in regards to being a solo female traveling all over the world. I mean, by yourself in crazy places. I mean, not places that people may think you're crazy to travel to, or people like me worry astronomically about you when you go, because we care about you and love you. But like, what are some of the, okay, so, you know, obviously my background, you know, and the situational awareness is super important, but do you find that the way you hold yourself, because there's a fine line, right? You don't want to come across as like a total, how do I say this nicely? I'm just going to cuss.
Just say it.
You don't want to look, you don't want to come across as this total bitch. But
totally.
You also don't want to come across as this soft, I can be taken advantage of person, right? And on top of it, you're in foreign countries where Americans don't have the greatest reputation a lot of times. So how do you ride that line? And what do you find yourself doing that has really been beneficial? Because I know American character is kind of a negative thing overseas a lot. And what is it that we do, first of all, that causes that reputation? And two, the other question I just asked.
Totally. I think Americans, the reputation that Americans have as international travelers, the bad reputation, is largely well-deserved. And I hate to say it, but I see a lot of American travelers being the people who don't make an effort to even learn about the culture they're in. Like, I've had people in Belize who are really nice people, but they want like a hamburger and fries, three meals a day, not just two, 3 meals a day. And it's like, guys, you're in Belize, have some conch and some fruit and some coconut something. And so Americans—
So not adapting to the culture.
Not even trying. Like, it's—
Not even trying.
If you don't like foreign food, that's fine, but don't cause a scene demanding exactly what you have at home. Because odds are, if you're in, you know, a second or third world country, they probably don't have access to the foods we have here and the menus that we have here. I see a lot of Americans—
spoiled.
We're very spoiled. And I think traveling internationally brings that to the surface. Women, I see, and this is going to sound terrible, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think a lot of American women traveling cause a lot of problems for themselves because they wear clothing that's not appropriate to the destination. Wear what you want to wear. Like, be comfortable, do what you want to do. But if you're in a Muslim country, don't go around in a bra top and tights. Like I've seen that happen in the Middle East in countries. And it's just have some cultural awareness. There's no quicker way to make enemies than by kind of offending local culture.
Right.
And that just is not, I don't care if you're buying a coffee in a coffee shop, that is not going to set you on good terms.
Right.
So being aware, I'm always working, right? So I always lean towards kind of work clothes. And yeah, I travel with like a cute dress and heels on every trip because you never know when I'm going to have to go to a business dinner or a fun night out. But I typically err on the side of like a functional clothing that looks professional, but I'm not showing my boobs off or like I'm not being promiscuous in a way that's going to cause problems. Because I see a lot of women dress like that and then get very offended when they get attention. And in Belize, and I've worked down there a fair bit, anytime I am going into town by myself, I don't care if I'm in like jeans and a rain jacket, guys are still going to catcall and hoot and holler. And that's just the culture. Like it caught me off guard when I first started going down there, but anymore, it's just like, well, they're just being fun. Yeah. That's who they are. And you can't let yourself get freaked out by that. I think
yeah,
as you
can't
said,
take it all too seriously, but you also remember you're not in the US right now. You know?
Exactly. And you need to be aware, you know, you said earlier, situational awareness. I think being aware enough, being sober enough, it's very rare that I drink more than 2 alcoholic drinks when I'm overseas. If I'm by myself,
very
I do
important.
one, period. Because you need to maintain that social awareness to know when someone's being like harmlessly flirty, or it's just cultural flirtation versus like, hey, this guy is a problem or a potential problem.
Right.
And I find a
Is
lot of
it
women
also
have
fair to say that not all countries see women as equally as we're seen here in the US?
Oh, for sure. No, I think that's a
And that's
very
probably
much
something to keep aware of, that
yeah.
You know, we have incredible rights and freedoms here that
Yeah.
people take advantage of every single day, and that's just not how
Exactly.
it is other places.
No, it's not how it is other places. And I actually really love it. Like in Argentina, I found there's still very much a machismo with the guys, but it's them, men wanting to be men and letting women be women and kind of being taken care of. Like the guys I worked with were very much like, hey, you're a professional, do your thing. This is awesome. But if you need us, we've got your back. And for me, I my personality, like I'm very independent, but when someone has my back, it's just like, oh, I can kind of breathe a sigh of relief. And so I think some places it's less PC than we are currently in the US. And I find it hugely refreshing. Guys are still guys, girls can still be girls. And it's awesome. It's very nice.
So let's talk about that for a second, because you are in a male-dominated world, and there are hard things that come with that. But I think a lot of times guys get bad raps, and it's only seen as this feminist negative thing. Whereas, you know, I was also in a male-dominated world, and were there some actual like total jerks? Absolutely. And did they make my life hard? Absolutely. But there were also incredible dudes who taught me everything I know and gave me the opportunities to achieve the things that I achieved. Excuse me. I think I just went through puberty. And you know, I owe a lot of my career success to men. And
absolutely.
So there are negative things that come into play, but it's not the whole picture, even though that seems to be the focus sometimes. Do you find that as well?
Hugely. I 99% of the time would prefer to work with men. I just came across 2 women on this most recent shoot who were extremely high drama. And the guide team, bless their heart, was coming to me midway through the week saying like, hey, can you give us some buffer and just come stand by me? Because I can't deal with this crying woman. And so I think like, women like that, A, make it harder for the rest of us because it's high drama.
Yes.
And now the guys see a female come up and they're like, oh, shit. You know, we've got another
Right.
high drama woman coming up. But I think most guys, and like you said, they're always bad apples, right? There are bad apples in both genders.
Yeah. The
and
women
I
also
said
cause
both.
problems.
Yeah, exactly. But most guys have been incredible. Like, I love working with men. Typically, it takes them like a day to kind of, or a couple hours at least, to watch me work and for us to chat and for them to figure out, like, okay, she knows her shit. She's not going to be a problem. And then it's fun. Then we get on super well, and the guys are awesome. I'm very, very grateful to get to meet and work with the guys that I do.
Yeah. And a lot of times the women cause that stereotype, that problem, are like ourselves. And
Totally.
it's valid a lot. Like, there's some stories I could tell, and I know you have some where women in your industry aren't even doing it. Like they don't even know how to fish. Someone else is catching the fish for them, and then they're taking a
Totally.
picture of it with the fish. I mean, that's just, oh,
It's
that's insane to me.
toxic stuff. It's not honest. And that's where I go, like the root that I look at with people who I'm working with is, okay, are they straight shooters? Like male, female, American, Lithuanian, who, whatever. Like, is the individual an honest person in what they do, and do they represent themselves authentically? And that's
Right.
harder and harder to find these days. A lot of
It
people are
really
trying to put
is.
up like a persona, which as soon as stuff gets hard, I'm sure you saw this so many times in your career. Like, as soon as shit hits the fan or stuff gets hard, they revert back to who they really are, and that persona goes away.
Yeah, I've learned through all my training and experience that under stress,
Yeah.
all the things you try to hide, all the things that you try to pretend don't exist come out, and it's not pretty.
Totally.
And that's why special forces and police officers and anyone in that kind of realm train the way that they do, because you have to be able to either work through it, fix it, identify it, see it, because if you do that in a real life and death situation, it could be a really bad day. And I mean, your world, it's similar. I mean, you're in places where if you make the wrong move, that could be a really bad day for you, and it has been. And you even make the right moves, and somehow you're still here, which is amazing.
So I love it. It's, well, like I said, I'm able to meet and work with people. I mean, a great example is I was in Bolivia on a hella fishing scouting trip for a fish called Golden Dorado, which is this really cool predatory golden colored fish that lives in the Amazon. So we're in the jungle and flying out every day to these headwaters through like super cool Amazon rainforest, and would be dropped off by the helicopter and then hike upstream. And it would pick us up, 8 hours and 12 or 16 miles later. Like it was a hike, swim, scramble type event, in 110 degree weather. Not fun. But with the right team, it's fun. And I knew I liked Nico, the guy I was working with that week. On one of the early days in the week, we were talking in the morning, and we're like, "Yeah, we're gonna drop you guys off on a river we haven't explored. We haven't sent people up here. We're kind of just gonna see what happens." And we felt pretty good that if the pilot couldn't meet us upstream, like we could walk back out to where he had dropped us off. So we knew we had an out at some point. And midway through the day, Nico and I were kind of checking in on each other and talking, and he's like, I had saved part of my lunch thinking, okay, if we're going to be stuck out here overnight, if we can't meet up with the helicopter, it's good to have some food, just some options. And he and I were talking, and he's like, "Yeah, I brought some extra rice too. And I've got rice in my bag. And between that and we could catch fish and we're going to have a dinner." And I'm like, I know I'm working with the right people when I'm not the only one planning for like the unexpected overnight in the middle of the Amazon.
And it
It's
wasn't
super
living in fear
fun.
for you. It was being
Totally.
prepared. It was just being aware that, hey, sometimes bad things happen and we have to be prepared for them. Like, that's what I try to
100%.
reiterate all the time. All of the things that Kevin and I do, it's not about living in fear. It's just about being aware that there is evil, there are bad things, there is bad weather that can cause horrible situations. And if you're prepared for it, it's really no big deal. It's not as stressful.
Totally. And it can be kind of a weird type two sort of adventure. You're just like, "Yeah, we got this. We're fine." And it's, again, I think finding the right people to go through that with is key. It's
Absolutely.
if you've got a hysterical panicker with you, probably not gonna
It's
work
not
out
fun
very
for
well.
anyone.
But if you've got like the dude with the rice and the machete, you're in pretty good shape,
Plus, it makes for a great story.
It does, for sure. It made for some good photos. That was a good day for us.
I bet. So, back to the travel. What are the top do's and don'ts that you have discovered throughout your years of overseas and internal traveling?
I think stashing the money is a huge
Domestic.
one. For international, stashing the money. And honestly, it's not a bad idea for domestic either. Just
No.
make sure you have spare money and a credit card tucked away somewhere.
Absolutely.
I do the same with passport. I keep a copy. I have a folder in Dropbox that I have shared with both my parents. That's a travel folder that has it's got copies of my passport, copies of like any visas I have to pull to go in different countries. So that way, if my passport and I go missing, they kind of have a paper trail of here's her documentation. That's a big one. And then keeping physical copies of the passport. Again, that's in all my bags. It's, I don't know if you can see, but I've got my pile of Pelican cases right there. And those, yep. All three of those Pelicans have passport copies in them.
So smart.
It helps. Paying attention for international travel to visa requirements. They're changing a lot. I just signed up to go to a shoot in Brazil in October, and they just changed their visa requirements starting April 1st. So you didn't need visa, no Americans do. And if I showed up to go to the airport without that visa in October, I'm not getting on the plane. So checking those visa requirements, especially now with the state of the world, they're evolving sometimes pretty quickly, and giving yourself time to pull those visas if you need to, because sometimes it's a quick online process. Other times it's a physical visa that can take a month or 6 weeks. You have to mail your passport in. So just planning ahead.
Yeah,
planning's huge. I always travel with like an under door kind of chalk or block that I can block a hotel room door with. So that way, if the lock...
Have you seen the Wedget thing that I've posted about? Is it like that?
I have. It's similar. This one's like a metal wedge triangle with a screw that screws down into the floor. So I found it works really well in like a bunch of different kinds of doors. And okay. I like the sharp wedge because I've actually been able to use that as like a tool if I've needed to help do some repairs and stuff over the years. So it's nice to have something metal with me.
Right.
So always use that. If I'm in a hotel room that feels a little sketchy or has an exterior door, like not to a hallway, I just feel better about it.
Yeah. Even if it isn't sketchy, there's no, what's the harm?
Exactly.
Nothing. You lose nothing by doing that every night.
Yeah. I sleep better. Especially if I'm coming into a place like tired and jet lagged and I'm in a foreign country, I just sleep a little better knowing that's there.
Right. Because it'll at least give you time. It'll give you more of an ability to wake up, get yourself together, have a plan of action. Time is of the essence.
Yeah. I always travel with a knife. I know we've talked about this. There are some countries where you can't, obviously in Europe and other places, but if it's legal, I keep a knife with me and keep that close. You and Rick were awesome in recommending a padlock now. I travel with a padlock and some webbing to make kind of a swinging weapon, which is, again, I've never had to use it, but I sleep much better knowing it's on the bedstand in certain places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just being able to deal with a threat if it comes through the door is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the reality is, like we've talked about, we are smaller. We're not as strong. We're built differently. God made us different for a reason. We do some really cool stuff too, but we're not going to always be as strong as the dudes. So tools level the playing field. And it's better to have something than nothing. But if you don't have the ability to put the necessary violence you need behind it, then it's really pointless. But I know that that's not a problem for you.
Well, it's come over the years for sure. The ability and the comfort level to do that. And my work's different because a lot of times I'm sharing quarters with a bunch of fishing guides who I don't know. Or I'm typically not staying in client accommodations in these lodges.
Right.
I'm whatever's open. And so just being, again, that's why I don't drink heavily on trips, being aware of after I get to know a group of guys for a few days, typically I feel pretty good about it. But sometimes there's one or two where you need to be aware of the situation.
And having that gives a sense of confidence, which whether you realize it or not, is going to have you hold yourself a little differently. And
exactly
how your personal presence speaks to others. I mean, that's your first line of defense. It's just
it's huge.
If you want to attack a castle, you'd prefer one without walls. So that that personal presence, your voice, that's your first line of defense. And it's so important to hold yourself in a confident manner, even if inside you're like, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap. Because
it's so true. It's a really good point. And you had mentioned this earlier and we kind of hadn't gotten into it yet, of just like how you carry yourself and your demeanor makes such a difference. I mean, even going through customs counters and immigration counters in foreign countries, if you're calm and not like moving around and looking anxious and looking at your phone all the time, if you're just kind of like, yeah, we're here, we're going to get through it, you're going to get processed faster. There's a lot of little, and again, you probably know so much about more of this than I do, but so many little cues that I think people look for and potential predators look for as well. Of like, okay, is this girl walking down the street with her phone in her hand, looking on it and not paying attention? Or are her hands free? Maybe her keys are in her hand Is her head up and is she aware of what's going on around her?
Right. Yeah.
One of my
Absolutely.
favorite things to do, and I did this in Buenos Aires last week, is if I'm in a sketchy part of town, carry a hot cup of coffee. It was really hot in the city and it was not the most fun carrying around the styrofoam cup of very hot coffee. But if someone comes too close and is a problem, and I was in not a nice part of town, it's amazing what dumping a cup of hot coffee on them can do just to give you space.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and that
They want an
costs
easy target.
50
The
cents.
more you
Yeah.
harden yourself, the better off you are, the safer you're protecting yourself just by simply holding a hot cup of coffee. That could make all the
Totally.
difference if someone decided to choose you.
Yeah. No, it's a, and again, that it costs hardly any money. It's just a good thing to have at hand, a good thing to be
Yeah,
aware of.
that's a great out of the box tool. That's awesome.
Yeah. And bonus, you can drink it at the end, you know, whenever you're back to somewhere safe, you have caffeine
Exactly.
too. So it works out well. No, it's little things like that. And again, just being aware, a lot of places in Central and South America where I work, it's notorious for guys to speed by on motorbikes and grab stuff out of your hand. You know, grab a purse off your shoulder, grab stuff out of your hand. So I always travel with like a crossbody bag. And I hate
Right.
it. Sometimes I have a camera backpack and I have to carry the cameras with me because I'm going to a place where I need them. And so I have a bag on my back, which feels very wrong in those busy city streets because it feels like someone can get in my bag, right? So I make sure to have nothing on those exterior pockets on that backpack. And then if I'm stopped like at a street corner waiting for a light, I stand with my back to a building or to a bus stop or whatever, you know, some
Yeah.
kind of wall there so there's not someone standing behind me.
I've also seen you spin it around and have it on your front.
Totally. Yeah, you can do that. There's a lot of little things. I never have my phone out. I know a lot of friends who live in Buenos Aires have their phone on like the lanyards that go around your neck. So at least if they are on their phone doing something, it's a little bit harder for someone to get it out of their hand. I still wouldn't feel totally comfortable with that, but the locals do it and it seems to be a good deterrent for them.
Yeah. So if you could go back to your young 23, 24-year-old self and tell that self one thing that you wish you would have known or done to prevent some kind of chaos that maybe someone else could learn from, what would it be?
That's a really good question.
In regards to travel, obviously.
Yeah, in regards to travel, yeah. I think, like I said earlier, having plans but not adhering to them all the time, being okay to diverge away from your plans is a good one. I think in terms of like travel safety, being maybe more cautious of whom I brief when I travel anymore, I'll hint at places where I'm going before I travel, but it's
Yes, I
very
love
rare that
this one.
I do it. Yeah,
Yes.
it's important. And even for people who are not traveling for business, I don't advertise like, hey, I'm going to be in Buenos Aires on this date. I'll
Right.
post when I'm there, sure. But I think the opportunity for premeditated problems is much less when you're like posting on Instagram day of. And often
Yeah.
I'll post after I leave a place.
Right.
So
And that
not
also
telling
gives
people.
criminals that are domestic who may know of you or follow you, give them the opportunity to know, oh, okay, she's gone right now. I mean,
Exactly.
it's insane how much information people can get on someone from just their posts.
It's crazy. And the stuff that people share a lot unknowingly, like it's they have no bad intent, but people share a lot. And that comes to individual comfort level. Fine. If folks want to put their entire
Right.
life on social, more power to you. Like do what makes you happy. But at least for my work and the international travel that I do, especially certain destinations, I don't advertise when I'm in countries with any kind of security
Yes.
issues, for example. And just
I
being
think
aware
that's
of like,
great.
yeah, it's okay to be off of social media for a little bit.
Right. And one other thing that you do that I think is brilliant that I've told people before is when you have tags on your bags, you don't put your address.
Yes, that's a really good one actually. When you put like the luggage tags on luggage, phone number fine, email fine, never ever ever put your physical address because it's so easy for someone like I live 3 miles from the Missoula airport and it'd be so easy for someone here in Little Missoula, Montana for a baggage carrier, you know, a baggage guy at the airport to look at that, say, oh, this girl's leaving. They drive by, see it's a small apartment where probably one person lives. They know I'm out of town and they can rob the place. So
Yeah.
never list. I sometimes I'll do city and state because I figure, okay, then they can get my bag back to Missoula. But never street address.
Yeah, that one's huge. I love that. That was a great answer. Great answer.
Good. I think
No, go ahead.
common sense for all this stuff.
Yeah, but common sense isn't so common anymore, my
It's
friend.
not. No, it's not. And that's the unfortunate thing. But I think just stepping back and being like, okay, what could go wrong in this situation? Again, like you said, you're not fear-mongering. We're not trying to make people scared to go out their front door,
Right.
but it's planning for eventualities.
Yeah, I think I had a sergeant who now is, I don't know, he's a captain or major or deputy chief, who knows? But he told me something because I used to get, this is really hard to believe. I used to get in trouble a lot for my face and not being a smiley, happy-go-lucky patrol officer.
Oh, yep, I
So
believe in this. Yeah.
I used to get complained on a lot. And he came to me one day and he said, "You need to smile at everyone. Smile at everyone. But in your head, think to yourself, how are you going to kill them?" If
I
you have
love
to.
that.
And
Yeah.
it helped me realize something that one, I can only change my face so much. So like let's not have some crazy dreams for that. But
Right.
to have a plan in your head, even though outwardly you may be very, nice and smiley or
Yeah.
maybe even somewhat submissive, and but that internally you're still ready, you're still prepared, even if outwardly it doesn't really seem that way. Because the reality
Absolutely.
is evil exists. We want to think that people are good, that they're naturally going to do the right things, but that's just not the world we live in anymore. And though that is the majority, there is a minority that grows every day, and we have to be ready for it. We have to be prepared for it.
Absolutely. And I think just the I do that every night when I arrive in like a different hotel room in a different city of okay, if someone comes through the door or the sliding glass door to the patio or whatever, what's my plan? Like which bed am I choosing? I would sleep on the bed the furthest away from the door if there are two beds, because
Yes,
that gives me that much more
always.
space. So it's little stuff where again, knock on wood, I've never had someone barge into my hotel room, but if they do, I have my swinging weapon nearby, I have a knife nearby if I can travel with it. The door is blocked, they can still come through the window or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have 6 more feet of space in which to work instead of them being right
And
on
you've
top of
already
me.
considered other avenues of escape if necessary, because of course we'd always rather
Exactly.
avoid if possible. And that's
Right.
in policing, that's called what ifing it. And by doing that,
I like
you're pre-planning in your brain avenues of actions depending on what happens that your brain will be able to access under that stress when you
that.
can't think critically. So that's what I try to like ingrain in people's head by doing that stuff, by doing scenario-based training. That kind of thing helps you develop that, behind the scenes, what your mind can access. Because if you haven't done it before, it's not going to be able to access it under stress when you're in a life and death situation. It's just not going to happen. It's not how our brains
Absolutely.
work.
No, it's not how our brains work. And I when I first started traveling, for example, I had a probably not rational, but I had a very high level of stress going through like customs and immigration,
Yeah.
typically immigration more so, because I was just like, oh, what if I get pulled aside or whatever? And for a while when I had that Russian work visa, the canceled Russian work visa in my passport, I got pulled aside a lot. I'd come through an airport line in certain countries and they'd look at that and look at me and they'd be like, step this way. And I got pulled into a back room and nothing bad ever happened. It was usually like a 5 minutes to half an hour where I would sit there, someone would come and ask questions, and then I'd go on my merry way. And now I just don't get fazed through immigration because I know that, certain countries, obviously there is a fairly dire worst case scenario, but typically like I do a lot of work in South America this year. Going to most places in South America, I'm probably not going to go to a back room and disappear. Like I'm probably going to come out of the room at some point in good condition. And so just
And
running through, like you said, the worst case scenario and planning for that.
like you've said before, the more at ease you are, the less stressed you are, the less you're going to be kind of seen. Because when you're
Exactly.
stressed out and you're fidgeting and you're doing weird things, that's going to make someone who knows what to look for kind of pay extra attention to you. But the more at ease you are, the less of a threat you are, honestly.
No, it's true. And I have, you're talking about the lack of smiling. And I was laughing internally at that because I have a pretty fixed, like, resting bitch face. So I'm going through airports. Typically, I'm tired. I've been on a long flight and I just can kind of zone out and be like, okay, we're doing this now. And that coupled with clothing that doesn't draw attention. I mean, the Pelican case always kind of does, right? Because it looks like I'm carrying something expensive. The cameras are not great for avoiding attention. But my typical travel uniform is like blue jeans, and I have a tan canvas jacket and a scarf. So I look pretty like benign. And it just helps. You wanna,
Yeah, you
the
blend
gray man
in.
come and firm. You want, yeah, you blend
Yes.
in. You just want to be like the person who does not draw attention.
How do you avoid complacency? You know, that's a huge thing that we try to train on all the time in policing, because you'll do a million traffic stops and they will go normal, and then you get that one. But avoiding complacency is the key to survival, because it's the moment you get complacent that some crazy thing will happen. I mean, I remember I had a call that it was for these kids that toilet papered the front yard of someone's. And that's a complacent call. You know, you show up, you're like, what do you want me to do? I'm not arresting some 13-year-old because he was an idiot, you know? And then it's in that moment that some random chick that wasn't even involved in anything comes walking at us with a butcher knife.
Oh,
And
gee.
yeah, she wanted to do this whole suicide by cop thing, and
Oof.
thankfully we were able to talk her down. But like, what, that's the unexpected, right? That's where complacency, if you're not paying attention and not being aware, you know, cops have to avoid it. So what do you do? Because that's really an important thing in traveling and all that you do in different places that you don't really know as well. I mean, how do you
Absolutely.
avoid complacency?
For me, in a roundabout way, like sleep and managing my physical self is huge. If I get too tired and get exhausted, I get complacent and just kind of too zoned out. I think there's a fine line between being a little bit numb when you're traveling, which helps avoid stress, but you don't want to go so numb that you become complacent or become dumb to potential issues. So, like learning to get that hour or two of sleep when I can and just keep myself functioning. I mean, this last trip I went 3 days with a total of 3 hours of sleep during my travel. And then I showed up in Argentina and had to take a 5 hour car ride, a 1 hour boat ride, and then fish and then perform, like fish and take pictures. There was no downtime. And so being able to just manage myself and know the point at which I'm like, I need to sit down on the boat and have some water and catch my breath a little bit. That helps manage. I think also for me, I'm lucky in that I rarely work in the same country multiple times. I'm trying to do more of that as I find places that really draw me and that I like. But it's hard to get complacent when you're in a completely new environment. So it's always a new set of culture and immigration requirements and clients and people.
Yeah, it
So
keeps you on
that
your
helps
toes
keep
more.
me. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes too much. Sometimes I wish I'd have more of like the familiarity. But there's something to be said for just like, there's not really room to get complacent when you're in a new place.
So if you could explain travel safety to someone, but you only had 30 seconds, how
Oh.
would you do it? And what would you say? You only have 30 seconds to be like, this is how you say stay safe traveling overseas or anywhere.
Okay. Do I get
And
a
go.
timer or am I estimating?
Oh no,
Okay.
I'm like doing one Mississippi in my head.
Oh, okay. Travel safety, traveling solo, keep your awareness. Be aware of your situational awareness, social awareness, the place you're traveling, the people around you. Food awareness, keeping yourself safe, not drinking food or not drinking water or eating food that's going to make you sick. Coming prepared for eventualities, having multiple copies of passport, having money hidden in different places, being aware of what could go wrong and planning for that. And just show up and enjoy the process. I know we've talked a lot about what can go wrong and it can sound overwhelming. Traveling's supposed to be fun. It's not always supposed to be comfortable, but just show up, enjoy who you meet, enjoy the places. Don't be afraid. Be smart, but don't be afraid to go travel and explore.
So now with all of this wrapped up, since you brought up, it's not about being negative or living in fear. Traveling's incredible as well. It gives you so many amazing experiences. What do you think is the greatest gift that you've learned or received from your years of traveling?
I think just the people I've been able to meet and work with. I've been able to work with some of the best fly fishing guide teams around the world and other people outside the fishing space. But to be able to come in and get to work side by side with them and learn from them is special. I've learned so many things about just travel and location and fisheries that I never, ever would have learned as like a guest visiting these places. So being able to have this network, I mean, I'm lucky.
No, sorry. Oh. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say at this point, I've got a network, which I'm extremely grateful for, where if I'm traveling to a country, I can typically reach out to someone. If I don't already know someone in that country, I can reach out to someone who knows a contact there and have a point on the ground where if something goes horribly wrong, I've got like a local I can reach out to,
right.
Which is, I know my mom loves that. And I can tell her like, hey, I have backup here.
But also that speaks to who you are, because I'm sure there's plenty of people that travel a lot and don't have that kind of a thing because either they're jerks or they didn't gain the respect from those cultures and communities. I mean, that really speaks highly of you. And on that topic, what is your greatest accomplishment in your eyes? I put you on the spot because you hate talking about yourself, but I'm going to make you do it.
I don't know. There's been a lot. I like Men's Journal did a really flattering article that came out in December that called me the Michael Jordan of fly fishing, which
that was awesome.
I would never want to fill those shoes. There are a lot more people in the industry who are better suited for that. But it was really flattering. And honestly, it's the little things. Like on this past trip to Argentina, mate is a big thing down there, the tea that they drink. And it's a social thing where guys pass it around a friend group. You drink your cup, pass it around, and keep doing that. And the guides put me in the mate circle. Like all of a sudden they were coming up to me saying, hey, come join us and drink mate. And that was like this unspoken thing of
you're accepted. You're in.
You're accepted. And that didn't happen for the guests. Like that, you know, it was, hey, you're here working. We see you as one of us, which that means more to me than any magazine accolade or social media accolade.
Yeah, that's awesome. So wrapping it up, what's next? What's the future look like for Jess McLaughlin?
It's busy. I'm heading to Las Vegas. Speaking of stateside locations where security is important, heading to Las Vegas in a couple of weeks to give a talk at a travel goods show, like a non-fishing trade show.
Okay.
Which will be fun. I'm trying to do more of the teaching and talking, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And then have a shoot in Mexico. I go to Colombia. I'm stateside for part of the summer, which is nice. And then Brazil in the fall. I mean, there's a lot of kind of crazy stuff coming up. Hopefully coming back to Argentina next winter. So it
That's
just
awesome.
Continues.
Well, if people want to reach out to you, hire you, follow you, where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you. My website, I'm sure we can link it here, is jessmclaughlinmedia.com. The last name's long and terrible, so don't even try and spell it. Instagram is a fun place to follow along because I do a lot of like behind the scenes. Here's what it really looks like on location. The good, the bad, and the ugly. So Instagram is just Jess_McLaughlin_media. And those are probably the best two places.
Great. Well, for any photographers or journalists out there who are wanting to get into this field, Jess is an overnight success of like 20 plus years. So
it doesn't happen overnight for sure. I have a lot of people saying, oh, I want to do that. It looks so fun. And my response is always like, okay, prepared just to grind. And any worthwhile career is like that, I think, right? You just have to kind of
Absolutely.
Sit down and do the work.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge on travel safety and just things to avoid, things to do. I think it's been great. And I've even learned some things. So thanks, Jess.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been fun as always. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you later, guys. Thanks for listening.